acres with 100,000 sheep that needed to be shorn each year, and that was what I noticed. Here, tens of thousands of acres was the normal astounding fact, and everyone forced themselves to be calm about it. Alfred had written to my father saying he was happy as a king at Knoebel, and now he was going to manage another station of similar dimensions, this place named Corona, up in New South Wales. "Are you working through the alphabet?" I asked him, but there seemed a quaver in my voice perhaps only I could hear. Like him, I wanted to be happy as a king at the sheep station I was slated for, Eli Elwa, which was 500 square miles and had a 20-mile frontage on a river named the Murrumbidgee. Alfred winked at me again as Mr. Rusden said, "Do not be seduced by the egalitarian principle here. Do not allow the men working on the station to treat you as a familiar. If they show any tendency to do so, quash it at once with firmness. Under these different stars, you must remain an English gentleman and maintain the reserve associated with that high office."
"I'll remember, sir,"
I said earnestly, half still a schoolboy. "Make no mistake. It can be lonely on a station out in the bush," Rusden continued, "and many good men are seduced into rough company. There is an answer to this in matrimony with one of the many sturdy and handsome daughters of neighbouring squatters. But you are too young yet. And if you wish to be a pastoralist on your own terms, you must maintain your distance from your inferiors. Some of the men are roguish and would not be beyond corrupting you with native women while you're in your cups. Do you understand?" I nodded. As the youngest of 10 children, I could see that even jovial men might think it somehow funny, as older men considered all bullying funny. "I hope that advice is not repellent to you," said Mr. Rusden. "But you are as good as a man now."
"As good as a man," Alfred confirmed,
smoking his cheroot and calm as Socrates. "And of course, beware of the wretched habit of drinking nobblers." Seeing my confusion, Alfred said,
"Mr. Rusden means glasses of spirit. Rum or battle-axe brandy. They'll nobble anyone."
"Especially in the early hours of the working day," Mr. Rusden told me. "Hutkeepers, blacksmiths and other pastoralists will always offer you nobblers because it is part of the courtesy of the bush. But if you yield to the importunity of one, you will not be able to refuse others without causing offence, because colonial fellows have a great deal of sensitivity in these matters. If you become known for polite refusal from the start, you'll offend no one person."
"Very good advice," said Alfred, winking at me again.
In a way, I was pleased he did, but also confused. Alfred seemed to be implying I should have a nobbler when appropriate. But how would I know when was appropriate? I was trying to feel out the rules of the country and hold on to them in the immensities ahead. I think my father believed that with me on one station and Alfred on another, we would be near neighbours. Now I had seen Alfred, the way his face carried my mother's high brow, but my father's refined lower features. I wished it were true. At last, Rusden stopped telling me the facts of the bush and invited me and Alfred for tea on the veranda. Not being married, he vanished a while to organize things, giving me the liberty to at last ask Alfred what he thought of Rusden's pastoral advice.
"Look, he's right, but you can't get away without being a fellow too," said Alfred, his full daddyish moustache quivering with conviction. "I would have said, join the jockey club, field some of your horses, and join the cricket club. They'll all support you. Go to church sometimes and drink with the squatters at their pub in town. People will stick by you if you make the social effort."